Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
If you genuinely care about what it is you're going to do with whoever you're going to do it with, you know, be the best dad, be the best husband, the best brother, the best man, at that moment, in the moment that you're in, just be present, be consistent, listen, not to respond, just listen, because I think too many people listen to respond. Just be a nice human being, be a nice version of yourself, and be the person that you want to be hanging around with.
Hi there, it's that time of week again. Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. Now, if you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Chris Barrows-Brown of Upping Your Elvis and with Neil Sahota, IBM Master Inventor, then do check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. Now, I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Simon Leslie. He's the CEO and founder of Inc. Global and the author of the book, There Is No Effin' Sales. Yes, that's a little bit ambiguous. Inc. is the global leader in connecting with travelers. They write, design, and produce print and video content for over 36 airlines in 17 languages and sell advertising in over 100 countries. Their clients include American Airlines, Air France KLM, EasyJet, Etihad, Qatar, Singapore Airlines, United Airlines, Virgin Atlantic, and many more. In our discussion today, Simon talked to me about providing a special experience to their readers with information that isn't easily found in other places. He described his never-stop-learning philosophy combined with the willingness to ask for help. And he came up with the failures of the copy and paste society. I love that expression. We talked about that in some detail. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Simon Leslie. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from London in the UK, Simon Leslie, who's the CEO and founder of Inc. Global and the author of There's No F in Sales. Now, Inc. Global delivers print magazines for airlines, which is an industry many thought obsolete, yet Simon leads his company to grow year after year, which is something that I'm really keen to explore today. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Simon. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
It's nice to be here. It's nice to hear a friendly Australian accent.
Dr. Mark Goulston, who was our guest on episode 305 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Simon. So big hello to Mark.
Yeah, Mark has been keeping me sane through this interesting period.
Yeah. All right. Now, I mentioned that your company delivers print magazines. Now, what got you started with Inc. Global? Because I think when you did start, it was probably a time when people were thinking that print was on its way out. So what inspired you to start a print magazine?
We've been going a long time, long before print was going out. Print was still coming in when we started. We started in 94. And when we looked at the whole sector, in those days, people paid publishers to do the magazine, and then if the publisher sold some advertising, they got some money back. But the risk was completely on the airlines, and the magazines were pretty boring. They weren't very inspiring. And we came along and we said, right, come on, we're going to change the model here. We're going to reinvent this wheel. And we decided to pay the airlines and take all the risk ourselves. And that's how we got into business. It was a bit brave. We had two very small airlines. One was basically one plane, one route from London to Beirut, straight after the Civil War in 1994. And the other was for Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania and South Africa. So we were sort of spreading our time between Africa and the Middle East.
Mm. And so how did you monetize that model then if you're paying the airlines to carry the magazines?
So we went out and we found advertisers who wanted to reach passengers. And that's been the sort of ethos of the business, which is we connect travelers with advertisers. And we built the business from probably having the very smallest airline in the world to today. We work with 30 of the biggest airlines. The demise of print, I guess, started in the early 2000s when everyone said the iPad was going to kill us and, you know, this is going to kill us and the internet's going to kill us. And, you know, up until 10 weeks ago, you know, the in-flight magazine was still the sort of last bastion of print. It was still doing particularly well. 2019 was our very best year. And nothing was going to kill us. And I think the pandemic is probably the first thing that's come along that's probably going to put an end to many of the print publications. Now, some of the airlines have decided during this period, we don't want magazines anymore. Some are saying, no, we want them back. It's our only ability to communicate with our passenger. You know, we've lost our touch points. You know, they buy their tickets. They might buy it from a travel agent or an Expedia, and we don't get a chance to talk to them anymore. So this was one of the few places where they had a interaction with their passengers. And we produce so much more for the airlines today. We produce their videos. We produce so much content. During the pandemic, we've built inspiration sites for them, so they've got somewhere to point their passengers to, because they need them to book more travel. They need to inspire them. They need to tell them what's coming next and where the best beaches are, where the best places to visit, or things that you should do. And so we've been responsible for that. We also own a TV network in the States, but that's also at the airports. Our business is 100% travel. So, you know, you talked about the book, and when I wrote the book last year, I was thinking, yeah, you know, it's a good title, but never has a title of a book been more relevant, you know, certainly to our business. We have had literally no sales for 3 months.
Mm. Yeah, well, we'll get onto the book and the messages that's got for today's environment in a few moments. But just from my own experience in traveling, I know I always love to look through the magazines, even at a time when, you know, I had my iPad or Android. Actually, I'm an Android person, but the tablet there to listen to podcasts, to look at websites and so on. But there's always, for a start, there's always that time just after takeoff where you have to turn those things off. And that's always a time where I've reached for the magazine, and then usually I'd be leafing through the magazine because there'd be wonderful glossy photographs, there'd be great articles about, you know, some of the places that were en route, so that it would build up anticipation about where I'm going. Or there'd be some really interesting content that, you know, you wouldn't go searching for, but actually captured your attention. And then, of course, there's lots of advertising there as well. That a lot of it was information that you didn't come by normally. So, yeah, so there's certainly something that there was certainly value to it beyond just being the information there that you could consume online or on a digital device.
I mean, I think you summed it up better than I probably could, better than I do sometimes. But it's giving you information you didn't know you needed to know. That's the way I tried to describe it. It's just, you didn't know that little island off the south of Melbourne has got the most amazing restaurants. It's like you extract information, especially when you're going somewhere for the first time. Well, even, one of our benchmarks was, if you were from Melbourne and I wrote an article about Melbourne, it would tell you something you didn't know about Melbourne. If we didn't do that, if we didn't educate you, then we hadn't delivered on our promise. Our promise was, no matter where you were from in the world, we wanted you to teach you something new. And I think the reason that we were successful with it is that we didn't think about it as an editorial. We thought about it as, how do we inspire the consumer? How do we make them feel like we're giving them value for money here? Would they pay for this magazine, even though they're getting it free? Would they pay for it? Is it the same quality as they get from a retailer in the high street? And that's what we spent. That was built into our modus operandi, let's say, of all our editors. They had to inspire people to leave them wanting a little bit more.
So how did you come by the writers that produced this content that essentially educated everybody, even if it was the locals in their own area, that they gave them information they didn't necessarily know?
I mean, it's everybody wants to be famous, right? So everybody wants to be a writer. And sometimes it was, we uncovered great writers. Sometimes we worked with some of the biggest names in media. So it was, I think we were a nice little melting pot of experience and youth coming together, and some people starting out on their journey and some people finishing off on their journey. But there was never a shortage of people wanting to write for us. And even when the internet came, there's a trust thing about print, that people trust something in print more than they trust something on the internet. And, a lot of these influencers, people with huge followings, still wanted to say, look, I appeared in this magazine, or my brand is in this magazine. And I think that's what print gave people credibility.
Okay, so the book, there's no F in sale. So why write that book, and what's the core message in that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I wrote it, it wasn't... we were in really good times, and it was a little bit cathartic. It was me getting my imposter syndrome off my chest. It was me looking back at the last 25 years and thinking, how the hell did we get here? And what mistakes have I made that I can maybe help an up-and-coming entrepreneur, somebody who's halfway through their journey, just to let people know that, that other people are going through the same challenges that you might be going through. And I think that was the last chapter in the book really talks about, was I just lucky, or was I just, was I actually any good at what I did? And what's happened in the sort of 6 to 9 months since the book's been published is I've had letters, emails, phone calls, sessions with people who've read the book and said, oh my God, you've really hit on something. There's something, these are the challenges I'm going through. These are the issues that I've had. I didn't think anyone else out there was suffering the same way as I do. And the funny thing in business is we're all going through these challenges every single day. And I think that what I wanted to do was just give, it's not a self-help. It's really just don't make the same mistakes. There's got to be a shortcut to everything. Unfortunately, today, everybody tries to life hack everything and find shortcuts. But sometimes, success takes time, and success is a long, drawn-out process. But there are things that you can do which will speed up that journey.
So you certainly talk about sales success being driven by belief, and that there's a whole unique culture around sales and a belief and attitude to that. So tell us a little bit more about that.
My own mantra, my own ethos that I live by, which is success is driven by belief. And I think that belief comes from faith. I think faith is a muscle that needs to be exercised every single day. I think most people don't have enough faith, and that's not a religious thing. That's just a belief in whatever you're doing that you're going to be good at it. I think there's four key components. I think if I can give these, this will help people. And if you can't tick the box on these four components, then I think this is where you're going to let yourself down. And they are, you know, am I committed? Do I really believe and love what I do? Is there congruence? You know, if I say I'm going to do something, am I really going to do it, or I'm going to lie to myself? And I think people spend way too much time lying to themselves. You know, have I got the confidence? And this is some of the big stuff that I covered in the book. You know, sometimes we don't know it, and we need to find it from somebody else. And I say to people today that if you haven't got the confidence or the belief, you can borrow some of mine. and the final point is communication. You know, can you talk? What's your linguistics? What's your language is like? Because I think that's really important. I ban the word try in our office. I ban the word can't. You know, I don't want people using language which is limiting. There's no limiting beliefs. There's no limiting language. Everything is living with a life of optimism and belief.
Yeah, and of course, as you said earlier, that they're all kind of muscles that we have to practice, aren't they? And you talk about habits and motivation and habits that drive a process, and then the motivation you talked about, but how committed are you and are you congruent? And that feeds back into the habits, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it takes practice and practice and practice. And, you know, anybody who is any good has practiced for years. And the idea of mastery, which is what, you know, all our gurus tell us, is 10,000 hours. Well, you know, I've been going, I think, for 20,000 hours, and I realize that I know nothing. I realize that I can learn something new every day from anybody, from a 5-year-old to a 50-year-old. I'm open to learning. That's one of the key components. Are you open to learning? If you think you know it all, you know nothing. If you think you're the cleverest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And these are all the things that you've got to realize that mastery is actually when you get to the point of you don't care what people think about you. You don't care what people are saying about you. You believe with the deepness of your heart that everything you're doing for the right reasons. And you feel, you have a sense of, it's not arrogance, it's confidence about you, that when you do something, you're doing it for the benefit of the person that you're doing it for, not just for your own self-gain or your own self-worth.
Yeah, it's like I think you mentioned in the book, you know, sail for the purpose of serving others. And I think that, you know, servant leadership to me is a big thing there. And when people change their mindset around sales and say, well, you know, I've got something that I really believe in that can help somebody else, then you've actually got a duty to put it out there and do the sale if it's a sales conversation that you need to have around that, isn't it?
It's really interesting because I tried a couple of exercises this week. You know, I get 1,000 emails a day. I get probably 10 LinkedIn inquiries. And you know how it starts. It's, you know, we've got some people in common. I think, you know, I would like to connect with you. That's step one. Step two is, you know, please tell me, how's business for you? And then the pitch comes.
Yeah.
And then when you don't reply, you get the same thing over and over again until you either delete it or give up. They give up. And yesterday I responded to this person. I said, look, I get 10,000 emails. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, here's my mobile number. Call me, pitch me. I'm still waiting for them to ring. And I do think, you know, because I noticed that she'd emailed me, she'd linked in with me. And I believe in, you know, you need to have lots of touch points with your customers. And then, you know, they need to know that you're engaged. Some call it stalking. I say engaged. But it needs to feel personal. It doesn't feel like a set, you know, I'm terrible because I analyze people's sales process and sales know-how. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm dissecting it. I'm like Quincy. I'm like, that wasn't so good. When the guy does a cold call of me at home, I'm like, whoa, that's a terrible intro. You need to slow down, start again. Tell you what, put the phone down, phone me back again. Because you know, I love sales. I love the process of sales. I love it when someone is good at selling. I'm the easiest person in the world to sell to. When, you know, when I walk in those strip malls and those guys come out and try and sell me something, it's a shoe in. But it is, you know, today people have forgotten how to pick up the phone. I think the art of being able to do business over the phone is a superpower. I think if any of the kids could learn one thing, it's not how to text or WhatsApp or, you know, Snapchat. It's how to pick up the phone and make phone calls, because that will differentiate them from everybody else.
Yeah, you mentioned communication before. And also that makes it personal, doesn't it? Because I've got a funny story. So I get hundreds of emails, probably not a day like you do, thousands, but they pitch to come on the podcast. And some are really good. I had a really good one today that was very personal. It talked about listening to an episode and it commented on the episode and then went on to describe why the person was thought they were a good fit for the podcast, which is fine. The other one I had was, I'm so-and-so. I'm a podcast booking agent. And it started off with Dear So-and-so, which wasn't my name. And I'm so-and-so, a podcast booking agent. And here's this wonderful guest we've got. And he would be fabulous for your podcast XYZ. And XYZ isn't in Overbuzz either. So they'd copied and pasted a template and had forgotten to change the names. And I thought, well, that's really good. And then I thought, well, the person who they were pitching, I had a look at their website and I thought, that's actually a pretty good guest. I would love to have them on, but the pitch put me right off. And so I went back, I replied to the person who'd sent me the pitch and I said, you know, if you're going to use a template, at least change the names so that you get the names right. You know what the response was? They came back and they said, well, we're a podcast booking agency and you're a podcaster. Would you like to sign up for our package for podcasters? And I thought, no, that's not going to happen.
You know, what you said there just triggered something in my head. We live in a copy and paste society.
Yeah.
We watch people on these reality shows and we say, I want to be like them. I want to copy what they do. I want to look like David Beckham. I'm going to have my tattoos. And that's the problem. You know, the individuality has got out of it. The personalization has got out of it. The love for what you do, the congruence has got out of it. You know, I don't want to live in a world where I'm just average. You know, I was talking to the author of a book called Average Sucks. And he's just reading this book. And he delivers it in a box and it comes with all these catch keys. And it's, you know, nothing about it is average. It's super. And I said to him, my only problem with the title and with the message of the book is that average, we are all average. Now, let me explain that. Even if you're like the best player in the world, you perform at this level. That's your average. Now, in order to get better, you've got to get better than your average. So, you know, that's what life is. So, but when you get better, that then becomes the average. So I'm not sure that average actually sucks. Average is the best that we can be. Because once you get better than it, it becomes average. So so that's my challenge with this concept of average, because I think it is really interesting and it just made me think about performance in a completely different way. When you achieve the best you can do, that's your average. And you know, it's a weird word, you know, to say I'm just average, but actually average is really good.
Yeah. It's an interesting discussion, interesting concept. I think, you know, you mentioned the copy and paste society. I think that's where, you know, and thinking of sales, they talk about the lowest common denominator. So if you end up discounting your product or service to match somebody else's lower price, and then, you know, things become commodity and it's a race to the bottom. That's where, you know, if that happens in performance, or like you mentioned, I want to be like so and so, and so you copy that person and it's totally incongruent with your personality and maybe even with your skill set, that kind of is similar to me to that race to the bottom.
Listen, you've got to be the best version of you, because everybody else is taken. And, you know, money will change hands when problems are solved. That's the message that I deliver to all my team. And the bigger the problem you solve, the more money that changes hands. And, you know, we've watched the industry change so much over the last 15 years, you know, where digital has allowed everything to be commoditized. And I've done everything I can to hold my business away from being commoditized. I've kept our media expensive. I've kept our messaging quality. And I think that's the thing that makes a difference. Solve big problems, you make money. Solve small problems. And problems, you know, is another issue that people get hung up about. You know, people get worried about the fact they've got problems. Problems are the best things you can do. You just want bigger problems. You know, if you've got problems, that's a good thing. Just look for bigger problems to solve. And the more problems you solve, the better your life will be. And you touched upon that earlier, because it's something that I really do believe in. You will get everything you want out of life as long as you help enough people achieve what they need. And that's probably the underlying message from the book. Help as enough people achieve what they want to achieve, and, you know, your life will be just fine.
Fine and dead. Yeah, that's a great message. Okay, now, coming back to the print magazines in aircraft and, you know, the travel industry, which has been hit really hard by the pandemic and, you know, the resultant restrictions that governments have placed on all of us to try to control the pandemic from spreading rapidly. So how has the impact of the pandemic and the government actions impacted you as a business, and what are you doing to try to mitigate that and to position yourself to be stronger coming out of the current situation?
Firstly, I'm not going to try to do anything. I'm going to do something.
Caught me out there.
It's definitely going to reduce the number of in-flight magazines there are in the world. But it's like most things, that, you know, they'll disappear for a bit and then they'll end up resurfacing because they'll realise that the communication channels have all been switched off. We've been working really hard to reinvent it, to bring it back in different formats, and that's what we've been doing over these last 20 weeks, both from a technology point of view and a distribution point of view. Some of the airlines, we're mailing copies to their most important flyers at home, so they keep getting informed and keep being inspired. And we're looking at ways that we can deliver the similar message to the audience in a different format, and maybe in a format that they're getting more used to reading content in. The other thing we've done is that we've looked at our businesses and said, right, well, how can we complement this? What can we do to make us different to everybody else? You know, people still see us as this print publisher, as the guys that do the in-flight magazines, because just we do so many. I was listening to Martin Sorrell yesterday, and he said, when you started WPP, he said, was it your intention to be the biggest in the world? He goes, look, my view is, if you're the best at something, you end up being the biggest. And I really did, and that really did resonate with me in terms of, you know, we became the best at what we did, and therefore, de facto, we became the biggest in the world, or the biggest operator at doing it, because we loved what we did and we were passionate about it. And when we went into a pitch, it was, you know, you can either hire the best or you can hire some local upstart or some local company who really don't understand the industry as well as we do. And what I decided, and I'm not quite sure if it's Tesla or Amazon, because I think they're both quite interesting brands, but I do want to be one of those of travel media. I want to own the travel media space, even more than I do today. I want to make sure that I understand all the behaviors. We have surveys we do, so we understand what passengers spend their money on and where they spend their time during their vacation, during their business trips. And what we've done is we've bought some tech which will allow us to target them at every point of that journey. So if you want to target them when they're thinking about where they're going, so you can inspire them and say, come to my destination or come here. Or when they've booked a trip, I'm now getting much more data where I can say, okay, I know, Jürgen, you're going to Sydney tomorrow. I'm going to make sure that I'm serving you messages which are relevant to you. Because I think one of the things with advertising today is we're getting so many messages and most of them are irrelevant based on something we've either said or searched, which are not always correct. So I want to make sure I'm serving relevant content based on where you're going or where you are right now, based on what you're doing. And I think that's going to be quite an exciting adventure for us as a business.
Hmm. Yeah, I often wonder about some of those, you know, the advertising that you get, and you get served up something because you'd once searched one term and it wasn't something you were really interested in. It was just sort of a casual search of something. But then when you're really looking for information, like you say, let's say I'm traveling to Sydney and I'm looking for maybe a place to eat or a nice place to have a quiet dinner with business associates that's a little bit special, then that is really hard to track something down, particularly something that's different, out of the ordinary, above average, if you like. So yeah, that I think there's a huge opportunity to really serve that sort of information up in a very focused way so that you're not bombarded by a lot of other advertising, which is just noise.
If I know that you're a business traveler going to Sydney for a two-day trip, I can literally supply you a content which says, here's 10 of the best bars for closing deals. Here are the 10 of the best restaurants where you can actually have a quiet conversation without music blaring. Mm. Here's the best views that you can take a client to wow them. And all of a sudden, we're communicating with you in a completely different way. Now, that might all be paid advertising, but it comes across as, actually, this is useful. And I think that's going to be the art of advertising in the next 5-10 years. Don't just bombard me with irrelevant messages. Bombard me with something which is going to help me enhance my experience, whatever it is I'm doing at that moment.
Yeah. Well, the paradox of that in some ways is that it's hugely valuable to me because it's giving me information that I'm actually wanting and looking for in that moment. And so much more valuable to the advertiser because they're getting in front of the people that want their services, as opposed to just getting out to a big audience of which they might have 1% or maybe even a fraction of 1% who are interested.
Yeah, we can create it around brand. So, you know, if I work with someone like OpenTable and say, right, let's do the best business lunches in every destination, and make sure that we're serving that to customers who are flying there on business. So I'm excited about reinventing our business, but just enhancing it. One of the things that magazines did is that they drove you to search, because you know you suddenly decide you want to go to the Maldives because you've seen these beautiful glossy pictures of people swimming with dolphins and sharks. But before you read that article, you had no intention of going there. Therefore, then you go to whatever your search bar is and you go, right, tell me all about the Maldives. Now I know there's some intent. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to book it. But if I know that you're definitely coming here, then I've got a different set of messages I can deliver to you. So it's different but the same for us, because we've always been thinking about how can we enhance that passenger journey. How can we connect brands with travelers? And all we're doing now is just doing it in a slightly more joined up way, and at every point of the journey. You know, we're up until 2018, it was really just magazines and a little bit of video. And then since then, we've now captured quite a lot of the airports with our airport TV network. And now with the digital, we really are capturing them from from the minute they think about booking right the way to coming back from their dream trip.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Lots of opportunities.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, this sort of thing, you know, a lot of people will be sitting through this pandemic going, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. And I think personally, both spiritually and commercially, I think it's been a fantastic reset for all of us to look at what we, you know, when business is going well, you don't really look that closely at it. You just say, well, you know what, we can afford to just deal with that. We'll deal with that another day. Right now, you have to look at your business through a magnifying glass. You've got to look at every person and say, well, what value are they adding? If they weren't here, would we still be okay? And also, why are we doing this? Why are we producing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this really expensive media when there is a more cost-effective way of getting that message into the same hands? Now, is it as effective? Maybe, maybe not. But it really did give us a chance to really look at what we do and say, well, how can we do it better? And from a personal reset point of view, you know, all of us were busy being busy. Mm. All of us were so busy, didn't have any time. And all of a sudden, life gave us time back, gave us some time to reflect. And I say to all my team, spend time thinking. Before the pandemic, they would think about things, but do nothing with it. You know, what we've been really doing a lot of during this period is, okay, let's think, let's spend that time thinking, but let's do something about it. And we've definitely taken much more action, and mainly because we had to, but also because it just gave us a time to really look inward at everything we wanted to get out of life. And it shone a mirror on us a little bit about what life was really, really about. You know, there's lots of people now talking about, is this the death of the office? Is this the death, you know, this work from home? And, you know, I get Zoom fatigue by 11 o'clock most days. It's not the way of doing it. The interaction of people and touch and real communication, I just don't think it's real. Now, will Zoom get better? Of course it will. Will we feel like we're sitting next to each other and, you know, it's much more personal? Maybe. But there is, you know, I went and had a coffee with someone the other week, and I just, it was real. It was like, we were back, and, you know, I've been traveling a little bit over the last month. And I've got to tell you, people at the airports right now are not scared. They want to get out. They want to travel. They don't want to be sitting in their front room, back room, whatever it is, with a laptop. They want to go and see the world again. And actually, this is a moment in time where you can go to anywhere you ever wanted to go to at a price that you could afford to pay, because everywhere is open and available cheaply. And I think it's actually exciting. I think it's an exciting time. And I don't think that people should be writing 2020 off. I think 2020 could actually finish quite strongly. Even for a business like us, which has had 6 months of no effort sales. Because I think the desire from most people is, we want to get back to, I don't like saying normal, because normal means we're going backwards. We're going to a new normal, a new beginning, a new exciting adventure.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you that, you know, we've been kind of forced to take stock of where we're at and given time to reflect on what we're doing and what's not working right now, because a lot of things aren't working in the existing or the environment that we find ourselves in suddenly. And so we're looking for options. But also, I think the idea of Zoom, I mean, to me, it's opened up opportunities for a lot of people who haven't embraced the online space as much to reach a much bigger audience. And I think that's something that, you know, can survive through to the post-COVID normal, whatever that looks like. But I certainly agree with you. I did have a coffee in between our two lockdowns, which we're in the second one now, but I did go out and have a coffee with somebody in between the one. I think it was the only coffee I went out and had a sit down in a restaurant with somebody, and that was like, oh wow, this is really cool.
It's like a little mini holiday, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Just, you know, let me order a coffee, and it's, you know, it doesn't come in a carrier bag.
Mm.
I think what it reminded me of a lot is that we were all running around enthusiastically in the wrong direction. And it doesn't matter how enthusiastically you run in the wrong direction, it is a pointless exercise. And I think being able to stop and look and say, okay, what is the right direction? Where do I want to go? Where do I want to take the business? Who do I want with me on this journey now?
Mm.
You know, who have I carried for a long time? Who's been, you know, where are those negative nannies in our business? Who are the people who, you know, who don't really want to be here? This is our opportunity to pat each other on the back and say thank you for your service. You know, it really has been a wonderful, even a way of saying, should I even be doing this? Nothing was, you know, it took everything off the table. Whereas, you know, normally you don't dive deep enough. You stay at a surface level. You know, we really have dove deeply below the surface to see what the hell is it all about? Why are we doing what we're doing? And do we need to carry on doing that, you know, post whatever this will be?
Hmm. Yeah, well, certainly. I think it threw up a whole bunch of questions that forced us to dig deeper, dig below that surface.
Mm. Absolutely. And I'm glad I did it. And I've quite liked who I've become. You know, one of the things that I did, I realized during the pandemic was I couldn't change. I couldn't make planes fly. I couldn't do what I did before. You know, I couldn't sell advertising because most of our customers are small, medium-sized businesses. Most of them were completely under the cosh. I still don't know if many of them are going to even come out of this alive and well. We've got nobody traveling, we've got nobody on airplanes. We've never had an experience in 25 years of airlines being grounded. Bear in mind, we've gone through 9/11, we've gone through SARS, we've gone through ash clouds, we've gone through financial crises. And all through those things, we traded normally and we didn't really have any challenges. And then all of a sudden, this comes along. So when I looked at the situation, I said, well, what can I do? The only thing I can do is keep my people sane, is focus on them and see what I can do. So I reached out to everybody I knew and lots of people I didn't know. And I've done, I think, 55 talks now where I've brought in some of the biggest names in sales, in motivation, in inspiration, and we've done weekly chats where they've come in and talked to the team. And I think in some ways that helped keep my team sane, it helped keep the business going, it kept the culture alive. And I think we learned a lot. And I think when we look back on it in a year's time, because we recorded all these sessions, I couldn't have done that in a million years. I couldn't have afforded to bring some of these names in and train my staff the way I did. And even the ones who've left, you know, have said to me, look, I learned so much during this pandemic. I learned more about so many different subjects. And I think that was, if I, you know, reflect on what I did well, that was one of the things I really did. That was a magic moment for me.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's so much to love about that too. First of all, I mean, obviously you're investing in your own business. And the culture of the business and the people in the business and placing them in a better skilled and positive attitude going forward, but also the whole concept of taking care of people. And I think, you know, there's so many examples that we've seen of businesses taking care of their customers and their own people. And I think those are the people that are going to survive and do really well at the other end of this pandemic, whereas the people that are kind of very negative, that have, you know, there's examples where customers have kind of been penalized because the business is suddenly not doing so well. And I think those those businesses are probably going to suffer after everything's washed up.
I mean, I've been really disappointed with the likes of Salesforce, Microsoft, LinkedIn. You know, a lot of these big corporations have said to you, tough, pay your bills or we'll switch you off. Even some of our landlords as well. You know, when we've been having conversations and saying, look, the only way we're going to come out of this is if we work together and you support us. You know, you don't go from suddenly 300 people to 120, 130 people and not have pain that's going to come with that. And I feel very let down, I think, with some of the bigger corporations. Some of our suppliers who've been our suppliers for many years and who've grown with us, you know, the first sign of weakness, they're like, take it or leave it, sunshine.
Yes, that's a bit sad. And on the other hand, we've been switching to a couple of services over the last few months where the services actually said, you know, normally we give you a 14-day trial, but given COVID, the situation and that, if you sign up now, you can have a six-month trial. Don't even need to put in your credit card yet. So, you know, and those kind of approaches, I mean, that builds loyalty. So as long as the service delivers what we're looking for, then I'm going to be signing up for the paid version at the end of the trial, no questions asked.
I think this is definitely a period where you're going to know who supported you, both employees, partners, relationships, and we've done our best to support our clients, both our advertising and our airline clients, by giving them content and stuff that we normally charge a lot for. We just said, look, we're going to do it. We're going to keep our people busy by doing stuff for you. So just tell us what you need. And I think, you know, hopefully they'll recognize it and remember it, because it's, you know, it really has been, it's been challenging to keep everybody sane.
But I think it's the right thing to do. All right. Now, before we started recording, you mentioned that there was a new book in the pipeline. So tell us a little bit about what that's about and when we can expect that.
It'll come out early 2021, but I think it's going to be about this. It's going to be about the, I was going to say 26 weeks that changed our lives. But who knows how long this is going to go on for. But also about what I learned about from all these great speakers, but what I learn about myself and how I repackage myself. And I'm torn with the title. It's either going to be there is an F in future, or you know, putting the F into life, because I think both of those things are, you know, that's what people are worried about. And worry is a belief that the future isn't going to be better than the present. And too many people don't live in an optimistic mindset or a faith-based mindset. And that's why I say why faith is so important, is that faith is just believing the future is better than the current. And that's the place that I live in. I live in a place of optimism and belief and confidence that tomorrow is going to be, if not no worse than today, but hopefully a lot better. I think that's what's exciting, and that's the message I want the book to deliver, is that, you know, life is full of challenges and surprises and things you don't expect, but it's also full of opportunity everywhere we turn. And this has been, as I said, 50 odd speakers, so many messages, so many amazing, powerful messages, and if I can capture all of those in one book, it's a bit like reading 50 biogs of some of the most people in the world. So that's what I'm working on, whilst rebuilding the business, whilst buying new businesses, whilst looking for new staff and growing again. You know, this is like a nice winter where we're going to prune everything, and the spring will bring back and we'll grow again. And you know, I am genuinely sad of the people that we've either had to let go or have left us, because, you know, we were flying, literally flying. We were doing brilliantly, and business was doing superbly. But that's life, you know. It's up and down.
Okay, well, we look forward to that new book and finding out what the title is as well. So, fascinating. All right, well, this has been wonderful, Simon. I think it's a good point to move on to the Buzz Now, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your extensive experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us an answer that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result. Change the world.
Here we go.
What do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Don't copy and paste. they say there's no such thing as an original idea, but, you know, there's definitely an original spin on anything. And I think you've got to have your own view of whatever it is, whatever operation or business you're in, you've got to put your spin on it. It's got to have your brand and your flavor.
Mm. Yes, that's don't copy and paste is certainly a wonderful mantra. I'm going to take that away from today's episode, the Copy and Paste Society.
I've never used that before, which I think is brilliant.
Because
Got it out of it, right?
All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Oh, read. Don't read and listen, watch videos. Just life is one big learning. You know, I'm a lifelong learner. I left school at 16, so my education stopped at 16, but I've never stopped learning and educating myself. And I think the best people who I've ever come across are ones who never stop wanting to know more, learning more, asking great questions, asking stupid questions, making mistakes. You know, they're all part of the process of getting better.
Mm. Yeah, I was reminded earlier when you were talking about learning, and one of my favorite quotes is the one by Albert Einstein, where he says, "The more I learn, the more I realize I don't know, and the more I realize I don't know, the more I want to learn." So that's one of my favorite quotes, and I think it sort of encapsulates what you're saying. Okay, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
I think Spotify has become brilliant, you know. There's so much actually on there beyond just music. There's incredible podcasts, incredible content, old content, which you can rejig and bring back to life. You know, when I was 16, I didn't have the resource that people have today, the YouTubes, the Audibles, all this stuff. If we wanted to motivate ourselves, we got a CD.
Cassette,
right? Yeah. To come. So you couldn't get instant inspiration. You had to order it and then wait a month. And I remember listening to Zig Ziglar. And I found actually some of the old Zig Ziglar tapes on Audible. And it just reminded me how brilliant he was and what a genius he was. And actually, I didn't realize half the things that I say and do were Zig Ziglar quotes. So that was stuff that was inspiring me 35 years ago. Is deep inside of me. One of his favorite quotes is, you know, the more people you help, the better you will be. Like as many people you help. And clearly that's lived with me for throughout the ages. And I think that's what's really, really powerful. Use the resources that are available to you. Don't take them for granted. Don't just... In some ways, there's too much content. There's too much information. And some people say, you know, read a book every week. And that's 52 books. Sometimes read the same book 3 or 4 times, because no matter how well or how much you absorb it, keep going back, keep learning from it. And there's, you know, a lot of that stuff, especially if you like it through your ears, because I think a lot of it then goes into your unconscious brain.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
Like you said about the Zig Ziglar tapes, yeah. Yeah, Spotify's invested a lot in podcasting, and I was amazed recently. I was looking at the statistics for this podcast, and Spotify is the number one app now that people listen to this podcast on as of the last time I looked, and I thought, wow, that's really interesting. So I'm going to have to dig through to see if I can find those Zig Ziglar tapes as well. Yes, so the days when you'd get this big folder with cassette tapes in it and listen to the cassette tapes, and then, of course, you'd think, oh, I want to go back and listen to that last bit again, because like you say, you know, reading the book again, you pick up different things the second time and different things the third time each time you listen. And that's with cassette, that's often a little bit tricky to do. It's so much easier today.
And you know, with Audible, you can clips, you know, you can add clips and stuff, and you can keep going back to it. So the biggest challenge I think people have today is that there's just too much content and there's too much information. There's too many messages, and you need to find people that you really like, and you know, just absorb their message and absorb their understanding of what life looks like. And it's hard to find, you know, people who are consistent. You know, there are people who have certain good messages, and then they go off, they get a bit carried away themselves when they think they're, you know, they're the gurus, and then their message filters a little bit. And that's how you switch, you know. And I think as you develop, you know, I still love Tony Robbins. I listen to Tony Robbins' meditations every morning. But there's certain stuff about Tony I don't like anymore. I think he's past his sell-by day, and some of the stuff is old. But there's elements of his state. State management. I think he's absolutely brilliant. We do energy sessions every morning in all our offices. You know, so we shake out and we create energy. I'm a huge believer in energy right now. I've spent the last probably 10 weeks learning about energy and how we vibrate and how we attract and how we operate. And when we're operating at the right energy level, when we're operating in that right state, it's amazing what goodness we attract. And that's everything from the food we attract to the people we attract to the money we attract or the wealth we attract. And right now I feel like I'm vibrating like a super engine.
All right. So yeah, focus on content that resonates with you, and really study that, and don't just listen once. Okay. Now, what's the best way to keep a project on track?
My own way of doing it is I have very, very tight measurements. What doesn't get measured doesn't get done. I make sure that we're measuring everything, we're checking everything, and everything's balancing. I don't love data. I don't love things to be too logical. I actually believe that nothing needs to make that much sense. And if it all feels too right and too logical and too sensible, I get a little bit worried by it. But I do want to measure things. I want to measure the things that are most important. So if we're doing that project, what are the most important things that we need to get out of it? And I want to make sure that those things are done. Everything else can blend into everything else.
And then, of course, you're adapting depending on what those numbers tell you.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, we have discussed this a little bit. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think, let's add some more value to that point. If you genuinely care about what it is you're going to do with whoever you're going to do it with, you know, be the best dad, be the best husband, the best brother, the best at that moment. In the moment that you're in, just be present, be consistent, listen, not to respond, just listen. Because I think too many people listen to respond. Just be a nice human being. Be a nice version of yourself. And be the person that you want to be hanging around with.
Yeah, I love that. Be the person you want to hang around with. All right. Well, thanks, Simon. This has been fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you, get a hold of your book, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared with us today?
I'm very vocal on LinkedIn. I do a little bit on Instagram, mainly just At the minute, it's more about shouting about how inept our governments are. You know, this is a crisis of communication, and I really am getting frustrated by their inability to communicate particularly well, to make decisions that are not so inconsistent, and the inconsistency between Holland and the UK, or the inconsistency between Sweden and everywhere else. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and that really annoys me. So you'll hear me ranting a lot on LinkedIn about that. You know, just if you do reach out to me, just don't be boring. You know, be interesting. I'll respond to every single touch point. If you write to me, phone me, text me, email me, I'll respond to you. I might be a little bit sarcastic, but that's just the British humour in me. You know, just touching again on that LinkedIn inquiry last week, where this woman said to me, you know, would you like to inspire your staff, motivate them, make them really passionate about their job, and, you know, create a culture that, you know, that you're proud to come to work in? And I wrote back and I said, no, I want entitled, miserable, grumpy staff. she never responded after that. And I wrote to her saying, did my LinkedIn fatigue and humour not inspire you to respond? And I haven't heard back. So I do think sometimes half of this stuff is so automated that it's not even real humans. And I think, you know, that's my message. If you're going to reach out, if you're going to speak to people, just be human. I mean, when I did all these talks, obviously I reached out to a lot of people. Only two people didn't say yes. One of them was Simon Sinek, and Simon, to be fair to him, has been to my office. He's been in and seen the culture. He's just I'm just too busy. I've just got too many things on. I've got my own problems I'm dealing with, and you know. But apart from that, everybody else wanted to help, and I really think it's if there was one message I say to people is everybody will help you if you ask. I think there's not enough people are scared of getting rejected. Get more rejection every day. The more rejections you get every day, the better you'll become.
Yeah, that's a great message to leave the listener with. So thanks for that, Simon, and we'll have links to your LinkedIn profile and to the book, of course, in the show notes as well. Now, finally, who's someone else I should get on the podcast and why?
Tim Story. Tim Story was Oprah Winfrey's coach. He's a pastor. He's a coach to some of the biggest celebrities in Hollywood, but he's just one of these genuinely nice people.
Great. So do you know him personally?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get an introduction to Tim and we'll see if we can.
I'll give you loads of people you can speak.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Simon. I've really enjoyed this today. Thanks for sharing your insights and your experience and tips from the book and your humor with us so generously today. I've enjoyed it, as I said, and there's been so much, I think, to take away from this episode. So I'm really looking forward to sharing it. And all the best for the future, all the best for the new book. Hopefully we'll start to see your magazine in the seat pockets again fairly soon in the aircraft. And let's stay in touch.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. And I really enjoyed it. It's been a great hour.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that really informative and delightful conversation with Simon and took something away from his episode. I really like his copy and paste society label and also his focus on providing special experiences. That's certainly the way you stand out. Now I'd love to know what you took away from Simon's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/SimonLeslie. That is SimonLeslie, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/SimonLeslie. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Simon there, as well as links to the Inc. Global website, to his book, There's No Effin' Sales, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in the conversation today. Simon suggested we have a conversation with author, motivational speaker, and coach Tim Story on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Tim, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Simon Leslie. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including communications specialist Janice Tomich and Neil Butler of Untypical. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.